Hello, my name is Dr. Latasha Schrader. I am a student advocate, school administrator, editor, and owner of Tempo Editing. I am pleased to welcome our guest, Dr. Brooke Myatt, to the podcast. Dr. Brooke Myatt is a TED Talk presenter providing over 15 years of unique combination of creativity, innovation, and industry experience in the higher education cinematics art classroom, encompassing award-winning real-world experience that will engage students to develop their creative voices, acquire a theoretical, historical, conceptual, and critical understanding of how to produce quality cinematic work using current and evolving technologies while learning all aspects of the production process for radio, television, film, and online content. Dr. Myatt earned a Bachelor's of Science in Film and TV Production, a Master's of Science in Creativity and Innovation, and finally an EdD in Educational Leadership, all from Drexel University. She also holds a Women in Leadership certificate from Cornell University. Currently, she is a department chair and tenure professor at Rowan College in
Let's get started. When did you complete your dissertation?
I actually defended my dissertation on December 15th, 2021. So I am a fresh new doctor.
Congratulations. That is a huge accomplishment. I remember that feeling like, yes, finally. So
I know I was actually, I did the doctorate in 2 3/4 years.
Oh my goodness.
Instead of the full 3 years. Yes, actually. And switching, supervising professors in the interim. But yeah, I kind of, really worked very hard with my chair. And, you know, he had said, I think you're ready. Like, if you're ready, are you ready? You can do it in December. Why wait till March? And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And that was such a great feeling. So, we got everybody together on the committee and they said they could all meet before the deadline, and I defended, and it was, you know, it's just, you know, it's a wonderful, obviously, feeling.
Yeah.
So yeah, as of the 15th of December, it was great. It was a great feeling.
That's awesome. And considering the fact that it was a pandemic, so good for you.
Yes,
good for
yes.
You.
That played a huge role, I think, in, you know, trying to complete. So there was, you know, a lot of, you know, ups and downs. And I'm sure we'll get to some of that, but it was tough, you know, even though it was an online program, mm-hmm. there were still crazy challenges,
yeah.
With having the pandemic, even though you were already ready online,
yeah.
just everything else that was going on, you know, within my personal life and my professional life, it was, you know, my student life was just a whole nother, you know, added thing on top
yeah.
of everything.
I can empathize with you because I actually went to a brick and mortar, doctoral program, and I believe my last coursework was completed in like July of 2019. And then I defended in October of 2020. So it had been like a full 18 months since I had been on campus,
wow.
even though it was like brick and mortar.
Yeah, it's like a whole different,
yeah.
you know, feeling. And, you know, I teach, you know, brick and mortar classes for over 15 years and, you know, flipping to doing, you know, my dissertation online, my master's was also online. And, you know, it is challenging to some people. Some people can do an online, you know, coursework. Some people just online doesn't work for them. So I applaud anyone that does either.
yeah.
You know, there's challenges to both ways
yeah.
of learning.
I mean, I think it definitely requires a different level of commitment and perseverance and time management, but you know, it's possible.
Exactly. Everything you just said, it's a yes, yes, and a yes.
Which methodology did you use?
So my research methodology was a narrative case study. I actually had gone to my proposal defense wanting to do a narrative restoring process, which my first SP told me about restoring. And then when I went up to the committee and everything was happening at one research site with a small group of my own students from my program, they had decided that they thought case study was going to be a better fit for my research. So that was actually the main change that I did. So basically for the first year and a half of doing all my research and writing out my, lit review and all my methodology, I was going to be doing a narrative restoring process. And then I flipped to narrative case. And I didn't really know much about how to do case. But, you know, in the end, it was a really creative and reflexive mm-hmm. way of bringing my research to life. Mm-hmm. You know, as you shared with everybody, my background is pretty much a creative background. I am definitely not a writer. That was one of my first things when I got done, you know, my first semester of courses. You know, I'm sure we all broken down crying at one point during our doctoral program that I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm not a research writer. This is so different that I'm used to writing. This is not the kind of, you know, way I know how to write. And I was really struggling, but I think doing a narrative case really allowed me to capture like the rich data and the stories. And I think that was something that connected with me being a filmmaker and just sharing the stories in a different way rather than on screen, you know, what was through writing. And it was a struggle at first, but, you know, I really enjoyed doing the narrative case.
So tell me a little bit about the restoring, because I'm not familiar with that.
So restoring process, from what the original idea was to listen to the stories of the participants and then retell, almost like a retelling. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be my way. So it was going to be like their narrative through my words, I guess, and to tell their story. And the committee, you know, had said that was great if you were going to maybe do students from like 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 different colleges all having an internship experience. But I flipped to doing a case study and a narrative case study because it was all one location. And so I should just tell everybody the topic, my dissertation title was Entertainment Technology Internships in Community Colleges, a Behind the Scenes Case Study. And it wound up that I interviewed 10 of my students mm-hmm. That were graduates of my entertainment technology program. So these were students that were film, radio, television majors, and also sound recording and engineer, music producers mm-hmm. In that kind of creative space, and their experience in a program that we have at the school, which is an internship course for 15 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was really interesting because I got some really interesting perspectives back. Being the program chair, and I actually created this course, it was really exciting to find out really what they got out of it and what I think it implemented for hopefully future students, you know, in the program. So it was really nice.
So that kind of almost acted as like a reflection for you as well on your teaching.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really interesting because what I actually originally thought I was going to get out of it was not what I got out of it. So it was very interesting to me. I actually thought, you know, I was looking for the reflection of, okay, how are we going to boost technology or more hands-on training or more laboratory, like in school labs and things like that. And it really wasn't about knowing the technical background at these internship sites. They actually were really well already accustomed to that kind of environment from how our curriculum was built. Mm-hmm. It was more on the soft skills that they didn't have. So things that, you know, in my niche specialty program, you know, I'm not telling them how to write an email to a boss or a manager or supervisor or to a client. And, you know, we have in our in general education, we have communication or public speaking, but, you know, some of the students were, you know, shared, I didn't really know how to speak to my boss in a professional environment, or I didn't know how to speak to a client that came in to, you know, record an album. I wasn't really sure how to speak to them, or, you know,
yes,
just generic soft skills that are left on the table that we're not providing them. You know, yes. Somebody was like, I had to ship 20 cameras out and I never filled out a FedEx slip. Like, you know, just simple things that I had to be taught how to do. It wasn't about, you know, how to take the cards out of the camera and upload them and back, you know, update the software or back up on a hard drive. It's like, they knew all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was the more the things that we kind of take for granted every day.
Yeah. I was just going to say that it seems so simple, but at the same time, it's not something you think about when you're teaching in higher ed.
Exactly. Yes. So a huge thing was time management and deadlines. They were like, well, I just go to my professor and ask for an extension.
Right.
Here, I can't go to my boss and say, I didn't even touch it.
Yeah.
I need another week when there's a deadline and a client's looking for, you know, their promo video on YouTube tomorrow.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it was really interesting. And then also just self-reflection time, or like time management for them, and personal time, how to juggle work-life balance. You know, we don't teach that.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting for them to say like how they handled work-life balance and what they were doing, you know, in their downtime that they found. And then working with coworkers, how to speak to coworkers, how to, you know, work in groups, you know, because a lot of them, you know, we're used to working in student crews, but if they had a problem, they could go to the instructor. Like here, it's, you know, they didn't feel comfortable going to the boss, you know?
And I think that, and this is just my opinion, but I think social media has not done our young people justice when it comes to like social skills and how to, you know, have a professional conversation and, you know, things like that.
I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, it's text speak instead of knowing how to, you know, talk to somebody.
Yes.
You know, you know, they don't look you straight in the eye because they're so, like you said, they're behind their devices and they're, you know, it's a quick back and forth, quippy commentary, like on a text or Twitter or, you know, something like that. So I totally agree with you that, you know, and it's interesting because I teach technology, but some technology can, you know, hinder that growth.
Yes. And I totally believe there's a time and a place for social media. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying when it comes to professionalism, and it isn't necessarily the greatest contributor.
I completely agree. Yes.
Okay. So which writing resources do you recommend for those currently writing their dissertation?
Let's see. So we actually, what was really interesting, those of you that have actually done anything with Drexel actually has through a Blackboard management system, they actually have a EDD kind of community. And on there are lots of different tools. So it's like shared Padlet resources for writing. They have a writing center. I did wind up purchasing Grammarly Professional for education to help me with my writing. I'm assuming these are kind of the resources you're talking about.
Yes.
So I used Google Docs and I used Grammarly. I also did use an editor at the phase when I was ready to send it. So I did send chapter 1 to 3 before proposal defense to an editor. Just because my forte was not APA 7. Again, I don't come from a writing background. I did not know, you know, all of the ins and outs. I mean, I could read the APA 7 manual forwards, backwards a million times. And, you know, I'm not going to get first place with that. So I knew I needed assistance. So that's really what I actually hired an editor for, was mostly APA. And then when I got to 4 and 5, I also waited till the end to hire an editor, but I didn't give them all 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 together. So I divvied it up, and it really worked well for me. But I think Grammarly helped me with all the changes of the tenses once I shifted to writing 4 and 5 and had to shift the tenses.
Right.
For chapter 3. By the time I was writing 4 and 5, I felt better as a writer because I felt like chapters 1, 2, and 3 had just become me as a writer, mm-hmm. I guess. I don't know if that makes sense.
I mean, and then
it's not really proper English there, but
and then part of the process is, you know, you become so familiar with that content because you're rereading it, you're continuously, you know, tweaking it. So it does feel like you're so familiar with it at the end that, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly. So I would say that, you know, I did go on a handful of some of the shared little Padlet tools that was on the EDD community, but, you know, those were just links to like the Purdue OWL site and some other sample little videos and things like that. But mostly, you know, it was, I kind of left it to the editor at the end because I knew I was going to leave it to an editor just because it's not my forte. I mean, mm-hmm. most of us going into doctoral program have not written a dissertation before.
Right.
So it's a whole new, you know, ball game to what we're used to. And I had not published or done anything academic writing or anything like that before, other than my master's program, but my actual thesis mm-hmm. was a film, a 20-minute film.
Yeah.
So I didn't really put some huge thesis together before. Like, my dissertation was my first big, you know, academic, you know, sample of writing.
Yes. And I'm glad that you brought that up. When you're in the midst of your dissertation or your doctoral process, recognize what your strengths are and what they are not. And it, you know, that actually is really a good way to decide when and if you need help, and to help you locate resources and community that can help you with those things. So that's a good point.
Yeah. And I think also what helped me along the way was we had groups like in my cohort from my first semester. I was put in a group with 2 other women from the tri-state area, which I'm from in New Jersey. And one was two of these other ladies that I was with. We just happened to all be close. They were in Pennsylvania, right over the bridge near Philadelphia. And we used to have weekly or every other week Zoom calls together.
Yes.
And kind of talk about where we were in our journey and shared some ideas, even though I had no, you know, these 2 women, their topics were nothing that I knew about.
Right.
But we were just sharing experiences of, you know, any ideas on how to get participants, because one of the women had to kind of whittle, streamline her topic. It was too like big, and she had to kind of hone in on something. And where could she find participants? And we were, you know, spitballing ideas.